When I was a teenager, in my early teens, I often stayed in the home of a couple. This couple had no children of their own, and so they treated me as their own child whenever I stayed with them. They were very kind, very loving to me, and I often stayed with them, especially during school holidays, because my school was very near their home, whereas my own home was quite far away at the time. Now, this couple were extremely wealthy. They had a beautiful house. They had a very successful business. And they had really everything that the world was able to offer. But I noticed that though they had everything, in fact, they had nothing. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is that they had all the material possessions you could hope for. They had far too much. You know, they had so much money that often they didn't know what to do with this money. So they would buy lots of things that was no use to them and no use to anyone. For example, they would buy a lot of very expensive Persian carpets or Chinese carpets. Now, you know that one carpet of high quality could cost thousands of dollars. And it was very beautiful. The problem is that when you buy that many carpets, there's nowhere to put these carpets. So the result is that there in one room was a stack of carpets from the ground up. Now, what's the use of buying a whole pile of carpets? You put it all in a great pile, which in fact takes up all the space in the room, and you can't even see the other carpets except the one on top. So what was the point of buying, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of carpets just to stack them up there? And year after year, the pile was there and getting bigger because they didn't seem to know what else to buy, you know, to use their money for. They were not Christians. They had no real aim in life. And so, what are you going to do with your money? They didn't care much for traveling. What was there to do? I mean, apart from going out and have a big meal, which was very bad for their health because they were already a bit oversized. And another big meal was not going to do their health any good, and would only serve to shorten their life, because that was the only other enjoyment they knew, is to eat, rather like Hong Kong people understand very well. They eat, and then so the size gets bigger, the heart condition gets worse. Eventually the wife developed heart trouble, diabetes, and all the list goes on and on. And the husband had all kinds of physical problems as well. So they had everything and really nothing. And I observed this and thought, and I was, of course, not a Christian myself. I was in my early teens then. I thought to myself, how meaningless, how very meaningless is this life? What is the point of having this enormous wealth and not having the faintest clue what to do? I mean, there wasn't any point buying another house and another house. No point you buying many cars. I mean, how many cars can you drive? Can only drive one car at a time anyway. And they were not interested in cars. Neither of them even knew how to drive. And since they lived in the city where they could walk to anywhere they wanted to go, everything was very convenient, they had no use for a car at all. So I looked at this situation, I thought to myself, what is the meaning of life anyway for them and for anyone floating around in this wealth? And so, when I came to the Lord, I read there in 1 Corinthians 13, a passage that I'm sure you're very familiar with, each one of you, that is the chapter about love. And a passage that it is very important for us to think deeply on, to meditate on. And perhaps we can read a few verses from this important chapter, even if we think we are quite familiar with it. Because it is precisely the familiar passages that we often understand the least. I hope you will excuse me for speaking relatively slowly, because I know that the translators have a very hard time, and I have the tendency to speak very fast when I preach, so I have to deliberately slow myself down. I used to have a translator in England that when I preached, and my translator translated for me every Sunday, he was often out of breath just trying to keep up with me. Since then, I tried to learn to slow down. 1 Corinthians 13, if I speak in the tongue of men and of angels, can you speak in the tongue of angels? I think not. But it says, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and knowledge, you may be a scholar. You have a lot of knowledge. You understand a lot of mysteries. If you are in physics, you might understand a lot of mysteries of this universe that really are mind-boggling. I often read books on physics out of pure interest in creation. And the ideas are often mind-boggling. Amazing. Things like quantum physics and so on. It has astonishing ideas. What they are capable of pondering. But if you have all this knowledge, and if I have even faith, you may be a wonderful Christian. You have enormous faith. Faith that is far above the ordinary Christian. You have faith so as to be able to remove mountains. Oh, that is something. Who has got this kind of faith here? Which one here has faith that can remove mountains? Not to say great Himalaya mountains. Let's talk about little mountains like Mount Royal. Can you move mountains? But if I have this kind of faith, but have not love, I am nothing. And if I give all I have away, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. I am nothing if I don't have love. And you say, wait a minute. Now, President Bush, George Bush is president of the United States, right? Of course he is. And he has overwhelming love, right? Who said? Nobody said he has love. He probably doesn't have any more love than any of us here. And then how can we say if he doesn't have love, he is nothing? He is president of the United States, and that's really something. Or if you are a scholar or a professor, and you have some position in the world, and you don't have love, does your professor have love? No, he's no love. He gives you a hard time. He grinds your nose in the dust. He makes you work overtime. Your eyes are blinking all red with tiredness. And he says, this project needs to be done by tomorrow. See, this is not human, this fellow. I mean, he doesn't remember his time as a student. Or maybe he does remember. That's because his professor was grinding his face in the papers. So now he's going to take it out on me. Well, if you want to revenge, don't revenge on me. Revenge on your professor. But he can't reach his professor now. So you are the poor scapegoat. This guy is not human. But is he nothing? Of course he is something. He is your boss. What do you mean, I am nothing? Well, read the scripture. It doesn't make any sense. I am nothing. He is nothing. Of course he is something. Maybe I am nothing, but he is something. And he has no love. No, what we got to understand here, brothers and sisters, is this. That without love, no one, including George Bush, is anything in God's sight. This is the point. It is looking from God's point of view. Of course, in the eyes of the world, the president is still the president. The professor is still the professor. He still has his position, his honor. He is really something in the world. But in God's sight, without love, they are nothing. And we are nothing. Now, this point is very important to understand. Because it means that God's way of evaluation is entirely different from man's way. Try to grasp this point very clearly. If you are something, even in the church, you have faith, you have prophetic powers, you are something. Because if you have prophetic powers, if you can speak with the tongue of angels, if you have knowledge so as to understand spiritual mysteries, let me tell you, you are really something in the church, are you not? You are. Of course you are. You can open the Bible and expound it and people's mouths drop open. This man is amazing. He's incredible. He opens the Bible and he can just show you the meanings. I never saw this in my life. He has the understanding of mysteries, just as Paul himself had. Paul had the knowledge of mysteries. He had the faith that could move mountains. And it is he who tells us that in God's sight, all this is nothing without love. Nothing. In God's sight, you may be Christian worker or pastor or something. I tell you, in God's sight, you are nothing. Unless you have love. Unless you have his love. Now that is something amazing. This changes our whole concept. In other words, when I look at you or I look at a Christian worker, I listen to somebody's preaching, I'm not going to say, oh, this is a wonderful man of God because his preaching is so eloquent. If you think like this, you are thinking with human wisdom. He's so eloquent. He's a great man of God. He can perform miracles. He has insight into the mystery of things. The Lord gives me insight too. I don't think it's because I'm that good. It's because he has mercy upon others. Not so long ago, there was someone who applied for the 6-team training. Someone I didn't even really know, because this time there are quite a number of people applying for training that I don't really know. In fact, some of them I've never even talked to, because the churches are so many these days, and the numbers of people are so large. Since our churches now, many of them have 100 or more people in Hong Kong or elsewhere, we are now speaking of hundreds of people, and among them there are many people I don't really know. And this person was one of them. I didn't really know. And applied for the full time. What can I do? In the past, I used to interview candidates. Now, to interview them, I have to travel on 3 continents. To travel around the world to interview them. So I leave the co-workers to do the assessment. And then I will study the assessment, put it before the Lord. And if I have questions, I will ask the co-workers to clarify. And as I prayed and looked to the Lord for instruction about this person that I didn't know who had applied for full time, the word of the Lord came to me and said, there is something in that person's life that needs to be put right. And until that is put right, that person cannot be.